This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Have you been completely riveted by all of the confirmation hearings going on Capitol Hill all at once as we inch closer and closer to the Trump inauguration tomorrow? Some of the nominees, it seems, are walking back some of the Trump rhetoric. No ban on Muslims, for instance. We heard that. Russia actually can't be trusted. We've heard that in one of the hearings. Others have offered to go farther than Trump has even suggested. Betsy DeVos suggesting that guns were appropriate in schools in her Secretary of Education hearing. Will this cabinet be about restraint or enforcing some of the more notable suggestions that made Donald Trump such a lightning rod during the campaign? Well, there's a lot up in the air at this point. Yesterday saw hearings of Tom Price for Secretary of Health and Human Services, Nikki Haley for United Nations Ambassador, Scott Pruitt for Administrator of the EPA. Today it's Rick Perry for Energy Secretary. And Steve Mnuchin, as Treasury Secretary, is being probed about his estimated $400 million fortune and the offshore companies he either managed or founded. So, Todd Zwillig, Takeaway Washington correspondent, will there be a complete team in place tomorrow afternoon?
Oh, no, not even close. And in fact, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer has come out to tell us exactly how fast this is going to go. President Obama got seven nominees approved on the day that he was inaugurated in 2008. Donald Trump is going to get two, according to Chuck Schumer. They are General James Mattis, who will lead the Defense Department, of course, and John Kelly, the other general to lead the Department of Homeland Security. Mike Pompeo, the congressman who's nominated to head the CIA, is going to get cleared for a debate on the first day, but Democrats want to have a floor debate about Pompeo. And then other nominees are going to go slower. Chuck Schumer cannot block these nominees because the filibuster rule on executive nominations was taken away. You remember that. They don't have the ability to tank any of these nominees without help from Republicans. However, they can make the process go slower. Chuck Schumer came out to tell reporters why he thinks that needs to happen. He says that Republicans have been participating, John, in what he called a cover-up of ethics, of potential ethics violations, ethics disclosure, and what he called far-right policies of Donald Trump's cabinet.
If there was ever a group of the cabinet nominees that cry out for rigorous scrutiny, it's this one. The president-elect's cabinet is a swamp cabinet full of billionaires and bankers that have conflicts of interest and ethical lapses as far as the eye can see.
Swamp cabinet, that's a clever turn of the phrase, drain the swamp, that Donald Trump has used again and again as he approaches Washington, D.C.
Right, and the type of Schumerian rhetoric that I would urge you to get used to now that he is Democratic leader and will be for several years. Sean Spicer, who is about to be White House press secretary, held his own briefing in Washington telling reporters that not clearing at least seven nominees on the first day of a Trump administration amounted to dilatory tactics.
There is really no excuse for the delay tactics and, frankly, the partisanship that's being exhibited by the Democrats. There's a time and a place for it. I get it. But again, I think if you hold them to the standard that they were held in 08, you recognize the fact that they are continuing to employ delay tactics after delay tactic, which isn't good for the government.
Now, it may be frustrating for Americans to see that we're headed into a delay kind of dysfunctional sort of gridlock government at the beginning of the Trump administration. But Spicer's got a point. And that is, they're not going to stop these nominations. And there's nothing about the background of any of these people that we've seen so far that's going to attract enough Republicans to actually derail the nomination, right?
Well, Chuck Schumer himself said that he didn't know if any of these nominees could or would be defeated. What Democrats say they want to do here is, instead of just giving, you know, thumbs up, unanimous consent to clear nominees really fast, they say, look, Republicans, you guys had 5-6 hearings on one day. In some cases, the ethics disclosure papers weren't even signed when committees had their hearings, like they weren't for Betsy DeVos to be education secretary by the time the hearing happened. If you don't want to have that type of debate in the committee, we'll just have it on the floor. Now, keep in mind, the definition of delay here is its own little thing in Washington. It's not the kind of delay that they used to have, John. There is no filibuster available. Democrats have the ability to make a nominee sit on the floor for a day or two or a day and a half, and then they can't defeat them unless they get some Republicans on board.
Let's talk about the hearing for Steve Mnuchin. I mean, He's a very rich person. He's a former partner at Goldman Sachs. He's also a movie mogul, and he goes way back with the Donald Trump. He was involved in real estate deals with Donald Trump back in the 1990s, if I'm not mistaken. How's that hearing going? And it's gotten rather entertaining at certain points.
It has at certain points. We'll get to the entertaining parts as well. It got a little contentious between some of the senators. Look, Steve Mnuchin is facing questions about his role in the financial crisis. When he took over a bank called One West, he and some co-investors took over the bank for $1.6 billion. And there were a lot of foreclosures after that. Democrats have branded Mnuchin a foreclosure machine. He objects to this. He says, I wasn't responsible for any of the loans. The people who owned the bank before I got there made the loans. I was just trying to clean up the bank. Here's Mnuchin defending himself against these charges today.
I want to correct the record about my involvement with IndyMac Bank. Since I was first nominated to serve as Treasury Secretary, I have been maligned as taking advantage of others' hardship in order to earn a buck. Nothing could be further than the truth.
All right. So, he was a good banker, but what are they trying to nail him with?
Well, Ron Wyden, who's the senior Democrat on the Finance Committee, John, went hard at Mnuchin, called him that foreclosure machine, said that One West churned out disclosures the way Chinese factories churned out Trump ties and Trump suits, accused him of profiting off of the misfortune of elderly and working people during the financial crisis, of accumulating major assets while people fell out of their homes. And then it resulted in this moment when Pat Roberts, who's a rather hilarious, I gotta say, and sardonic senior senator from Kansas on the Republican side, when it came around to him, he had some suggestions for Ron Wyden.
Senator Wyden, I've got a Valium pill here that you might want to take before the second round. Just a suggestion, sir.
Just another suggestion. We've got a lot of colleagues waiting. If you could be brief, it would be helpful.
I'm going to be very brief.
For the record, Todd, did Senator Wyden take the Valium?
For the record, Sherrod Brown, the populist liberal senator from Ohio, jumped in and had a bit of yelling to say that he thought the entire thing was inappropriate. It kind of had the feeling of being told to relax when you don't want to be told to relax. Sherrod Brown jumped in for his friend Rod Wine. He didn't like it one bit.
Well, the interesting thing about Mnuchin here is that he is very much on the kind of financier end of the banking business, whereas someone like the folks that were in the Obama administration were more the fixers in the financial crisis. Mnuchin wasn't a part of that. He very much was a part of many of the folks that actually profited from what happened during the financial crisis. He's certainly not alone, but that's what he is.
Right. That's true. And not alone in being sort of a captain of Wall Street, an alumnus of Goldman Sachs of several decades, to be installed in leadership role at Treasury. That's not unique to Donald Trump, and we should stress that. But here is the tension, not only the aftermath of the financial and housing crisis that affected so many millions of Americans, but also after an election where Donald Trump specifically ran on a populist platform. And so now the question going forward, and part of the tension that Mnuchin is facing in this hearing and after he's likely to be confirmed, is just what kind of guy is he? You know, he was right. Okay, because he was in business making millions, if not hundreds of millions, off of the financial crisis. But then what kind of Treasury Secretary is he? He did tell members of the Senate that he has seen the devastating impact of overregulation of the financial industry. Nobody who suffered in the housing crisis would want to hear that. But he also said he values the importance of good regulation, says he believes in it, said that when he had to get a charter to get One West Bank, it was a good process that he should have undergone. So he's straddling both of these lines. Is Steve Mnuchin a captain of Wall Street and a rapacious investor, or is he a Donald Trump populist? Is he neither? I think we don't know that yet.
Well, this populist line from Donald Trump and the extent to which the Democrats want to skewer him for not actually being a populist is evidenced in all kind of the language and rhetoric that we're hearing. Wyden really said that Mnuchin's like a foreclosure machine, like the Chinese factories that pour out Trump ties, et cetera. That's a hint of what we're going to hear over the next 4 years.
sure did. The subtext there is hypocrisy, right? That's sure what it is. And if these hearings are setting a tone for what the Senate and the relationship between Congress and even Donald Trump might be like over the next 4 years, you're seeing it. Look, hanging over all of this, of course, you have the Obamacare repeal and a big tax cut through tax reform that's coming. John, those two things are going to happen pretty quickly. Even Republicans around here in Congress understand, as we've mentioned before, but it's really important, this low approval rating that Donald Trump has, 40% or even lower, almost historically low for a new president. This matters. This is a law of physics. Mm-hmm. This is gravity for a politician. Those two things are going to happen quickly, Obamacare repeal and then negotiations on tax reform and a tax cut. After that, members of Congress, Republican and Democrat, aren't sure what Donald Trump's political fortunes and his political clout are going to look like in another year or 18 months. They get these two things done quickly, and then a lot of other things, immigration reform, infrastructure, things Donald Trump says he wants to do, building that wall, those might be Donald Trump's problem.
Well, Mnuchin and Trump seem to definitely move in the same circles. Enough with Mnuchin, the movie mogul and financier, and his movie star fiancé on Capitol Hill. Let's talk about Pruitt on the EPA.
Yeah, Scott Pruitt had the bulk of his hearing yesterday to head the EPA. Look, Scott Pruitt has been, as Attorney General of Oklahoma, an activist against the EPA. I stress once again, he's likely to get confirmed. Democrats have been working hard to take as many shots at Pruitt, not only his position on the science of climate change, but also whether the EPA has the power to regulate clean water, clean air across state lines instead of the states. So he has been an activist in his role. He's filed many, many lawsuits against the EPA and its power to regulate. Now he's going to head an agency that Democrats think that he's tried to undermine throughout his career. And that is setting a tone also for a relationship between the Senate and the new administration of Donald Trump, which starts tomorrow, John.
The picture of this new administration coming into focus, thanks to Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent. Thanks so much.
You got it, John.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.